morning. Today's daf in Chulin's Kuf Chaf Zayin. We are in Kuf Chaf Vav Amud Beis. We're almost up to the Mishnah, in the middle of the Amud. Just a little bit more to go in terms of finishing up. We're finishing up the Mishnah that we spent a little bit of time on. All of yesterday dedicated to the topic of Tumas Meis and various forms of Tumas Meis. And we learned Mishnayos and Olos compared it to our Mishnah here in Chulin, the ninth parak. Ninth parak of Chulin dedicated to the topic of Tumas Tahara, mostly having to do with the tumah coming off of an animal, meaning an animal dies without shechita. The animal's a nevela. The animal dies with a shechita, but it is subject to tumas ochlin. The food is subject to tumas ochlin. This is what we've been dealing with for the past couple of weeks. Just a couple more days of the ninth parak of Chulin. We finish on Friday. And in the course of the discussion, so the Mishnah, going back to Kuf Chaf Dalet, Amud Beis, the last two words of the Amud, going to top of Kuf Chaf Hei. So the Mishnah taught us that if I have the thigh bone, so the thigh bone is going to be conveyor of tumah. If you look back at the Mishnah, the kulyas asheretz anogeh behem sesumim taharim. All right, let me go back just a little bit earlier. Kulyas nevela, the kulyas asheretz. If I have the thigh bone of a nevela or the thigh bone of a sheretz, anogeh behem sesumim taharim nekum kol shehu metame b'maga, if they are encased, meaning that the bone is fully encased, so then they are going to be tahor. In other words, even though there's going to be marrow in the bone, and even though that marrow is going to be a source of tumah, but it's perfectly encased in that bone, and therefore it's not going to be a conveyor of the tumah. So nekuvim kolshu mitame b'maga. So then, but once they become perforated, so then they're going to be mitame b'maga. Minayin shaf b'masa, and how do I know also that the same is going to hold true regarding tumas masa? Now remember, nevela is metame b'maga uvemasa. Sheretz only is metame b'maga. But how do I know regarding our bone that whatever is going to be the din regarding maga is going to be the din regarding masa as well? So the Mishnah taught us that the Torah connects the two. Tamalamar hanogea v'hanosei. Eshe balechla maga balechla masa lo balechla maga lo balechla masa. So the Mishnah gave us a drasha that whenever there's going to be a conveyance of tumas maga, same with tumas masa as well. Now you remember the Rashi back in the Mishnah on Kufa Chafei, really important Rashi. Rashi addresses a very basic issue, which obviously requires clarification. Rashi writes back in the Mishnah, how could it be that the bone that's encasing the moach is not going to be a conveyor of tumah? It should be a shomer. And we learned it. It's the first halacha we learned in this parak, all the way going back to Kuf Yud Zayin, some time ago. But we learned all the way back then that once you have something that serves to protect the item which is inside, it serves as a shomer. So why isn't the bone considered a shomer? So you touch the bone, you should become tameh through the halacha of shomer. So Rashi, back in the Mishnah, gave us a very basic rule. Rashi asks this question, and Rashi says, Afa gav shomer machnas umotzi, toma hani mila b'davar she'efshali gav b'toma atzma. So Rashi, back in the Mishnah, says that, yes, it's true. A bone is going to be a shomer, but that's only in a situation where you have current access to touch the tuma in of itself. V'afilu lo nagabam, yala b'shomer tameh. And that means to say now that I could touch the shomer, I didn't touch it, I'm sorry, I could touch the tumah, I didn't touch the tumah, I touched the shomer, I'm going to be tameh. So, but Rashi writes that, but in a scenario where I have the marrow in a bone, the bone is encased, and currently I have no way of accessing the tumah itself, so then the bone is not going to convey through the halach of shomer. An important Rashi back on the Mishnah, and we're just going to wrap up the sugya now. The Gemara has a very short discussion. So the Gemara has a drasha, nevela, nivlasa. The understanding is that nevela, obviously not only referring to the tumah, but also to what is going to be tumah, and that is going to be the meat of the animal, the flesh of the animal, moch being included. However, if the bone is a non-perforated bone and the moch is in the non-perforated bone, so it's not going to be a conveyance of tumah. Yachal afilo nikva, how about if there's a hole in the bone? Tamalomar hanogea yitma, eshef shaliga tameh veshiyef shaliga tahor. But if there's a hole in it, so once there's a hole in it, and once there's an ability to touch that which is inside. So now the bone is going to be a conveyor of that tumma. The bone is now going to serve as a shomer, being machnis umotzi, importing and exporting the tumma. In this case, it's going to be exporting the tumma. Amale Reb Zera la Abaye ela me'ata behema ba'ora loti tama. So the Gemara says, well, now, if this is true, so the Gemara says, so I have a couple of simple questions. One, says the Gemara, you know, the hide of an animal, so the hide of an animal should never serve as a shomer conveying tumma, communicating tumma, because isn't it true that it's encasing the animal in total? Now, the answer is a pragmatic answer, and the answer is very simply, it doesn't encase the entire animal. In other words, unlike marrow in a thigh bone, where the bone is actually fully encasing that which is inside, that's not true with the hide of the animal, and the Gemara basically makes that point. So he says, Pokhazi, come in a kavim, yeshba. You look at the hide of an animal, and you will see that there are orifices throughout the entire animal, and those orifices obviously create a hole in the hide. And so, hard to even understand what the question was to begin with, meaning it is not fully encasing the animal. Amalei Rav Papa l'Rava l'Me'ata kulya b'chalva lo titame. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's now talk about the kidney. Now, the kidney is fully encased. Okay, saw this firsthand. Kidney of an animal. So kidney of an animal is fully encased in its chalev. So there is a layer of fat, right? Hard fat, right? Chalev fat. So there's a layer of fat that surrounds the kidney and lo titama. So now we have a full encasement. So if you are right that something which is fully encased is not going to be tame. So if you touch the kulya of an animal, so you shouldn't be tame. So tachazi kame chutin nimshach in heimenim. So the Gemara says once again, that's not fully encased. When we're talking about a kidney. So once again, there are the vascular tubes that go out of the kidney. And so the kidney is in of itself is not fully encased. And so once again, not a good question. Just the answer is pragmatic. By Rav Oshia, chishev ala lenokva velo nikva mahu. So Rav Oshia says, now what if you have a machshava that you are planning on making a hole in it, but you haven't done so as of yet? So mao mechusa nikiva kemechusa ma'isedami olo. So it is one of our classic questions throughout Shas, and the Gemara asks it over here, and that is, what if right now it is not perforated, but we have every plan in doing so? So what would be the halacha? Would the encasement now be a conveyor, a current conveyor of the tumah, even though it doesn't currently have a neck of yet? Now the Gemara's answer is going to be very short, abrupt, and very clear, very decisive. So, Hadar Pashta, now in our version of the Gemara, we have the Mechusa Nekeva, Lav Kemechusa Maisadami. And now in our version, we have it as saying that, well, if it's Mechusa Nekeva, it's not Mechusa Maisa, meaning that it is considered perforated, as long as I have plans to perforate it. So then, even as it's currently constituted as non-perforated, it's going to be in conveyor of Tumah. It is, quite frankly, the Gemara doesn't have any discussion about it. The Gemara doesn't elaborate on this point. It's a little bit difficult to understand. Meaning that generally, yes, in other areas of halacha, we do make a distinction, or we do forecast the future. And we say based on forecasted future events, so therefore now we get to look at it in this manner. Right? The principles of kol ha-omed. Anything which stands to, right? And we have many examples throughout this. So over here... Right, kol ha'omed lisrof kesarof dami. Right, we have so many of them throughout Shas. So over here, but it's a little bit strange though because it's not ha'omed, meaning it is not the destiny of a bone to be perforated. Meaning sometimes you perforate the bone, sometimes you don't. So, but it's not a tendency. We're not trending towards perforation. So it is difficult to understand the Gemara's conclusion over here based on our version. Okay, just a quick note, there are other versions of the Gemara, meaning I say our version, there are other versions of the Gemara. You could see, you could see the Shita Mekubetzes, who quotes that there are other versions of the Gemara's conclusion over here. Our version of the Gemara, admittedly, is a little bit difficult to understand. Okay. Yeah? That's an excellent point. Right, just to reiterate, why if this is true, meaning if the Gemara's conclusion over here is correct, so then going back to the previous questions of the hide of an animal, even though there is the Gemara did give an answer of there are perforations, but once we have this new yesod that Kol HaOmed works over here, so then that would have been an excellent question, excellent answer for the case of the hide. That's very good. Yeah.
Stronger with the hide, yeah. Because the hide is always removed.
Very okay. Excellent. Okay, we're back on topic with the Shratzim. Now remember, a Sheretz is going to give off Tumah. But two important things to remember as just basic pieces of information. One, not every Sheretz. First of all, a Sheretz is anything that walks low to the ground. Meaning, it's not just the animals that crawl on the ground. It's not just slugs and snails. But they're basically anything that walks low to the ground. Right? Toads, right? We have different categorizations of the animal. Right? Amphibians and insects. But from the Torah's perspective, it's very simple. Right? The categorization of animals are the large animals, then fish, birds, and then shratzim. Anything going low to the ground. So that would include your weasels, your squirrels, your toads, right? Anything that's low to the ground. So snakes would be a sheretz. Okay, so two important points to remember regarding tumas shratzim. One, it applies to only 8 shratzim, and that's it. The Torah in Parsha Shmini, last week's Parsha, so the Torah actually articulates all 8 of the Shvatim, are actually introduced to us in 2 Psukim. One Pasuk it has 3, and the next Pasuk it has 5. And as I mentioned already before, good luck in terms of trying to give definitions, working definitions of what these 8 are, right? Part of what we lost in the Masorah are basic definitions of what they are. I'll make my best guess, and I could even be right. You never know. So, for example, we're going to be talking extensively today about the tzav, right? I'll say the tzav is a toad. Who knows? And even in the world of toads, right? Me and my 7-year-old look over the National Geographic, and I know there are many different types of toads. So, okay. So, but still, nevertheless. So, point number one: the tumah only comes from 8 shratzim, and the rest of the world of shratzim are all not going to be tummy. And the second, basically, so we all need to remember is that the tumah only comes about after the sheretz is dead, not while the sheretz is alive. So, you touch a live sheretz, even if it's one of the 8, you're not going to be tummy. It's not going to be an avatumah. And then the third basic yisod to remember is that the tumah that's given off by the sheretz is only maga and not any other communication of tumah. Not masa. If I carry the sheretz but don't touch it, I'm not going to be tameh. And certainly no tumas oval as well. You see the progression, by the way. You know, the progression is very clear to see. When it comes to a sheretz, it's only maga. When it comes to a nevel of an animal, maga and masa. When it comes to human remains, maga, masa, and ohel. So as you move up developmentally in the animal, so the tumah that comes off of it is going to be a more serious tumah with more means of communication. That's the right if you want to see it in that regard. Over here, we're talking about the egg of a sheretz. So that means to say that some of the shratzim lay eggs. Okay, which ones do? I know the answer to that only because Rashi tells me. So beitzas a sheretz. So Rashi says that of the shratzim, 3 of them do lay eggs. So yesh sheretz umato beitzim tsav lata'a and chomet. So of the 8 shratzim, so Rashi identifies 3 of them that lays eggs in terms of how they give birth. So here we're talking now about an egg of a sheretz that has inside of it a developing fetus. And so, if I were to touch the egg of that sheretz, the fetus inside is dead. Remember, that's key point number one, because if it's alive, it's not going to give off tumah. It's dead, and as we're going to learn now in our Mishnah, it also has to be formed. There has to be some formation of the developing fetus inside of the egg in order for it to convey tumah. So beis hashemetz hamiru kemes tahora. So if I touch the egg of a sheretz where it is mirukemis. Mirukemis means that it's formed. You can actually see the form of the sheretz inside, meaning it's that developed, the developing fetus inside. So if you touch it, you're going to be tahor. Why are you going to be tahor? Because it's encased in the shell.
Yeah, but it's supposed to open up the shell like before.
Oh, it's omed. Okay, good. Okay, it's a good question. So anyway, so you're going to be tahor because it's encased in the shell, and this is no different than the case of the bone. In fact, once you see the Mishnahs back to back, right, with without all the Gemara, so it's very clear. Meaning that the idea of the previous Mishnah, this Mishnah is one and the same. That when it is fully encased in its shomer, so then the shomer is not going to serve as a conduit of the tumah. So keitzah hasheretz merkemes tahara. I'm sorry, beitzah hasheretz merkemes tahara nikva koshu tameh. Now you put a hole in it, so you're going to be tameh. And this is again the same idea. Once you have a perforation and once there's a means of accessing the source of tumah inside of the shell, so then even if you touch the shell, you're going to be tameh. Achbar, shechetzio basar vechetzio adama. Now, you know that rodent where half of it is organic and the other half is mineral, right? Everyone I'm sure here knows. So there is a rodent that is half animal and half made of the earth. Okay, no? Okay, I'll come back. I'll discuss that in just a moment. So, if you can just entertain the thought that there is such an animal where half of it is made up of animal and the other half is made up of the earth, so if you touch the buster, it's going to be tame. Adama tahor, but if you touch the dirt portion of this animal, so it's going to be tahor. Rav Yehuda Omer afanageh ba'adama shechaneged abaster tamei. And Rav Yehuda says that if I touch a earth portion, a dirt portion of this animal, but it's keneged abaster, but it is opposed, it's opposite the actual flesh, so one is going to be tamei. So Rav Yehuda is more machmir. Okay, now in terms of the identity of this creature, I know it is one of the more interesting parts of the Mishnah, if not the most interesting part of the Mishnah. In terms of the identity of this creature, first and foremost, we're going to have to make the obvious point, which is, this creature must be a subcategory of one of the Eshratzim. Meaning, we're having a discussion of whether it's going to give off Tumah or not going to give off Tumah. The starting point for this discussion is that Esheretz is only going to give Tumah, only if it's one of the eight. So this, whatever we're describing right now, this creature, has got to be one of the eight, otherwise there's literally nothing to talk about. Okay, that's obvious point number one. Okay, point number two. Okay, so I visited the zoo many times. I visited zoos around the world. I have not seen such a creature. In fact, if you ask anyone who is interested in animal studies, so they'll tell you that this creature does not exist. And, okay, good. So the best, I mean, there are many sources on this topic, but one of the best sources on the topic is the Rambam right here on our Mishnah. Right, the Rambam writes a running parish on Mishnayos, and the Rambam's parish on Mishnayos, right, it's... It was written originally in Arabic, translated subsequently into Hebrew. So the version that we have in our Gemara is obviously the translation. We're not reading the original. So the Rambam, obviously fascinated by this Mishnah, as he's fascinated by every Mishnah. So the Rambam writes a running commentary on all these Mishnayos, and he writes a comment on this Mishnah as well. So the Rambam says, if I can find it, I'm going to read it. So, yeah. So the Rambam writes as follows. Now keep in mind, by the way, a little bit of context over here as I'm about to read the Rambam. The Rambam was one of the most rational of our Balei HaMesorah, meaning he was a man of rational reason. He did not believe in any of the mystical or metaphysical. He only believed on things that he could see. And obviously that puts the Rambam sometimes in a tough spot in terms of explaining some of the basic concepts of Yiddishkeit. Right, Malachim and Shadim and Kshafim. Okay, and we had good. So the Rambam sometimes gets a little bit caught in terms of discussing some of these issues. But I'm only saying all this just so you understand that when the Rambam's writing, he's not writing as a mystical person. The Rambam is writing as a very rational human being, and he writes on this particular topic. And I found it, so I get to read inside. So in Yom Kippur Shesh Bo Kvar Sir to Tawar Baalei Chayim Ve'evra B'sochabeitza Kidechsev Asher Asisi B'seiser Rukamti B'tachtios Eretz Ve'havayos Ha'achbar Bovamin Adama Ashim Sak Saso B'sar V'ksaso Afar V'tit V'hu Inyan B'forsam. Sorry, the first part of the Rambam which went untranslated just explained how the fetus develops inside the egg. Okay, now I'll slow down and now I'll translate because now he's discussing our topic. So as far as this creature, which is half organic, and the other half is mineral. So who inyan before some meod? So the Rambam says everybody knows about it. Ein mispar l'rov hamagidim li, and there is literally no number to the people who have come over to me and told me that this such an animal actually exists. Shirauze alpha p shemitzios bal chaim kazeh davar matmiya. Now the Rambam admits it's very hard for me to imagine such a creature that's made up of organic material and earth. So velo no das bo tanas b'shumpanim, and it's hard for me to just argue on its behalf. But the Rambam says many people have come over to me and told me that such an animal actually exists. So okay, so the Rambam basically was not he is not shocked by such a Mishnah. Okay, or by such a creature, I should say. And there are more sources on this topic of this creature. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. By the way, today's the daf to describe some fantastic creatures. The Mishnah over here mentions one. Tana Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara. The Gemara quotes a Braisa, Hatameim L'Rabbos Beitzah Sasheris, V'Kulya Sasheris. So Hatameim, which, by the way, we've already darshaned earlier in this perek, and by the way, we've darshaned it for other drushas, which makes it a little bit challenging because we're only entitled to darshan one drasha per word in the pasuk. Okay, which does create a bit of a challenge. But anyway, Hatameim L'Rabbos Beitzah Sasheris V'Kulya Sasheris. So the Hatameim is to include the egg of a sheretz, meaning when we say egg, we really mean the fetus, the developing fetus forming inside the egg of a sheretz, the kulyas of sheretz, and also the bone of the sheretz as well. Yachol afilu lo rikma. Now, let's say the developing fetus inside is so underdeveloped that it's not even formed. Tamalamar ha sheretz. So ma sheretz shirikem, af beitzah sheretz shirikma. So just like a sheretz is only going to give off tamal where it's formed to the point where you can actually see legs and arms and whatever are the defining traits of a sheretz, same thing is true regarding the developing fetus inside the sheretz. Yachla filo nikva. Now, what if I touch the egg, but the egg is fully intact and non-perforated? Tamalamar hanogeya yitma. Eche efshar liga tameh, v'eche efshar liga tahor. So, nope, it's not going to work. Meaning the conveyance of tuma through the shell is only going to be in a situation when I can touch the sheretz in of itself. The kama nikiva sa kichut hasa'ara. Now, when we're talking about a perforation, a hole, so how big a hole is it? So the hole does not have to be big at all. As long as a hair could fit into the hole, that would be sufficient. She'ef sheliga kichut hasa'ara. Now, Rashi over here goes on. Now, Rashi here is lengthy, and I'm not going to read the entire Rashi. I'm not going to read any of the Rashi. I'll be even more honest. But Rashi over here goes into a lengthy discussion. But to summarize Rashi's point, it goes like this. Hair that is connected to your body is considered you, part and parcel of you. So that means to say that if you were to take one of your hairs, and it's a long hair, and you would touch tuma with the hair, you become tame. Conversely, if you have something which is an avatuma, and you touch its hair, you're going to be tame as well. In terms of the conveyance of tuma, hair on the body connected to the body, and Rashi makes a big deal about the fact that it has to be connected to the body. It can't just simply be clumps of hair on the body. But hair that is connected to the body, vis-a-vis tuma transmission, is no different than you are. So when we talk about, well, how thin does the hole have to be in order for you to be able to touch the tuma? So once we know the halacha is that a hair is considered part and parcel of the body, vis-a-vis tuma, in both directions, importation and exportation of the tuma. So now the hole has to be no bigger than the size of a hair. Because as long as you could stick a hair through the hole, meaning a hair of your body connected to your body, so that is going to be now a transmission of tuma. Because now you touch the tuma. Okay. That is a succinct summary of the Rashi. See Rashi for a lot more detail on this topic. Back to the Gemara, Achbar Shechetzio. And now we talk about our creature that's made up of half animal, half mineral. So, Amar Rav Yishuv Ben Levi V'hushe Shritz Al Panei Kula. Now, a qualification of the Mishnah. So, if you come across this animal, first of all, please tell me, take a picture, right, send it out. If you come across this animal, and if you were to touch the animal, you're going to be tummy. That's what the Mishnah taught us. Now, there was a machlokus on this topic in the Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda, but right now, just focusing on the opinion of the Tanakama. So, v'hu shehishritz al p'nei kula. It is only going to be a communicator of tuma, an avatuma, only if a full side of it is, in fact, formed, meaning made up of animal. Okay, so this animal basically is generating. Now, I didn't make this point back in the Mishnah, but it's not too late. And that is that the Gemara's understanding is that this animal is not a sexually created animal, but rather it is spontaneously generated from the ground. Okay, that's the Gemara's assumption. That will become clear in just a moment as we go a little bit later in the Gemara. But the Gemara's assumption is that this is an asexually reproduced animal, and it actually comes out of the ground. It spawns from the ground. So the Gemara says that it only will become a source of tuma if I touch it, meaning the animal portion of it, and a full side of it is actually already converted into an animal. Basically, and I'm not giving a biological description of maggots, but basically the Gemara views it like a maggot. You know, maggots kind of just appear, right? You don't see them reproducing, right? In other words, but they just simply, right? They're not there, and then all of a sudden they appear. So similarly, again, I'm not giving a biological description, just giving a perception description, a perspective description. So similarly over here, so it kind of just forms. You need a full side of it to form in order for it to convey tumah. Now, this clause of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, this qualification, some actually learn it not on the Tanakhama, but rather on Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Afanu Geba Adam Shekeneged Basar Tamei. Now Rabbi Yehuda has a chumra. When you come into contact with this creature, you don't even have to touch the animal portion. Oh. Okay, that's a quick response. Okay. So you don't even have to touch the animal portion. According to Rav Yehuda, you only have to touch the earth portion of this creature. But as long as it's opposite the animal, you're going to be tameh. Now, I'm Rav Yehuda Levi v'hushish ritzapane kulo. Now, I hear the qualification. You're going to be tameh, but only if you're touching earth opposite the animal portion, as long as the full side of the animal is already formed and developed. So, man demasna reisha kol shekena seifa. Now, learning it on the Resha, so for sure you're going to learn it on the Seifa. However, man demasila Seifa v'al Resha afagav delo hishritz. Now consider, says the Gemara. Let's say this clause of Rav Yeshua ben Levi was only going on the Seifa, not on the Resha. If that in fact was the case, so what is Rabbi Yehuda representing? Rabbi Yehuda is representing a tremendous Chumrah. The Chumrah is that you don't even have to touch the animal portion. You only need to touch the dirt portion and you're still going to be Tameh. And now imagine that we put the qualification of Yeshua ben Levi. Yes, that's true, but only in a case where within the animal portion, a full side of it is formed. Okay. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, will that be reflective or will that be revelatory to the opinion of the Tanakhama? Not necessarily, because Rav Yehuda is already representing a chumrah. The Tanakhama is saying you have to actually touch the animal portion. But if I only had Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi on the Seifa on Rabbi Yehuda and not on the Resha, so then the argument could very well be, look, within the Rabbi Yehuda's Chumrah, that if I touch the earth portion of the animal, but it is connected, it's opposite the animal portion, so you're going to be Tameh. Ah, but there, because it's a Chumrah, we're going to qualify. You need a full side of the animal to have been formed. Ah, but according to the Tanakhama, maybe not. Maybe, as long as you touch any animal portion of this developing creature that's coming out of the ground, and even if a full side of it is not formed, you're still going to be tameh. So if I learn Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi on Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't necessarily reflect on the opinion of the Tanakhama. Tana Rabbanan. B'toch shenemar achbar shomei ani afil achbar shebiyam. Sheshmo achbar. Now you know that there's a land achbar and there's a sea achbar. Now you may not have known that. And it also, again, would be extraordinarily helpful if we knew what the achbar actually was. I mean, we translate it in modern Hebrew as a rodent. It's some form of a rodent. So you can call it a mouse, whatever, however you want to describe it, it's a sheretz. Now, in terms of animals, the Gemara has the yesod, which actually we're going to go through today, and that is the following, that there are parallel animals on land and in the sea. Whatever animal exists on the land, there's a parallel animal in the sea as well. There's a notable exception, which we're going to go over a little bit later this morning. But outside of that, that is a yesod, a basic assumption that the Gemara makes regarding Maisa Bereishis. And now, if we know that the Achbar is going to be one of the animals, so I might have thought that, well, it's both Achbars, meaning the land version and the sea version. Vidinhu, Timei B'chulda v'Timei B'Achbar. So Machulda min Hagadel al Haaretz, Af Achbar min Hagadel al Haaretz. So the Gemara says, okay, but now we're going to use our classic classic methodologies. So here we'll use, I'll call it a hekesh, I could be right, but we know that a chulda is metameh and an achbar is metameh. So when it comes to the chulda, we know by definition it's the land chulda. Now how do we know it's the land chulda? Because, and now I'm going to give away some of the Gemara upcoming, chulda is the exception. Chulda only is on the land chulda, there is no sea version of the chulda. So once I know that by chulda, it's the land version. So even though by achbar, I have two choices, I have two options. I have the land version, I have the sea version, but because it's connected to the chulda, and because the chulda is only on the land, so the same thing is true regarding the achbar. Oklach lederek zu, the Gemara says, or we can argue in the other direction. Timei b'chulda v'timei b'achbar. Machulda, kol sheshma chulda, af achbar, kol sheshma achbar. The other argument we can make is very simple. Anything which is called a chulda is tamei. Now, granted, there's only one version of the chulda, the land version, but so what? If it's got the shem chulda, it's tamei. So I'll say the same thing with the achmar. Anything that is named and identified as the achmar is going to be tamei, both the land version and the sea version. So afil achmar shabiyam, shishma achmar. So in terms of argumentation, so the Gemara says we can argue in both directions. So we don't know if it's left up to our reasoning ability. So tamalamar ala aretz. So that's where the Torah comes to say that it's the sheretz al haaretz. It's the land version. So meaning a drasha. We have a drasha. So I ala aretz yachol al haaretz yitma yar liyam lo yitma. Now the Gemara entertains the following havamina. Okay, so it's the land version. How about if the land version decides that, you know what, we're going to spend a little time in the sea, right? I think about the otter. Again, I'm not identifying, I'm not defining, but in other words, the otters love spending time in the water. So maybe what the Gemara is entertaining now is that even though we know it's the land version, but if the land version is spending some time in the ocean, it's not going to be tamei. So tamalamar hasharetz, kol makom shesharetz. So the Gemara, by saying the words hasharetz, meaning wherever it decides to crawl, it's going to be tamei. Oh, eino ela hasharetz kol hamashritz yitma, shein mashritz lo yita, otzi achbar shechetzio basa vechetzio adama, shein paru verava. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we can darshan the following manner. Maybe hasharetz is coming to tell us a different characteristic in terms of what is going to define it being tamei. Maybe it has to be mashritz. Mashritz, I'll define it as sexual reproduction, right? Which is what the Gemara does. And so, right, in the beginning of Parsha Shmos, Rashi quotes the pasuk, right? The paru v'yishritzu, right? The Jewish people, right? They reproduced. So maybe what the Torah is telling us with the word hasharetz is that in order to be the type of sheretz that is going to give off tuma, it has to come about through sexual reproduction. So kol hamashritz yitma shein mashritz lo yitma, and that would exclude by definition. By the way, we're on the top of Kuf Chazayin Amud Aleph, three lines down. Otzi achbar shechetzio basa vechetzio adama shein par v'rava. It does not sexually reproduce. And again, I go back to the point I made back in the Mishnah. The Gemara's assumption is that this creature that comes out of the ground is spawning from the ground. It is asexually reproduced. And so therefore, if that's true, so then this drasha would by definition exclude it from tuma. Vidinu. And the Gemara says, okay, but now let's use logic and reason. Time bechulda v'time b'achmar. Machulda koshesh machulda, af achmar koshesh ma'achmar. Avi achmar shechetzio basa v'chetzio adama. So over here, let's make our argumentation. Meaning when it comes to chulda, we know that that anything that is called a chulda is going to be a source of tumah. So the same thing with achmar. Anything that has the shame achmar, regardless of how it reproduces. So avi achmar shechetzio basa v'chetzio adama. O klach l'derek zu. Okay, argumentation. Okay, I can argue in another direction. Okay, but the chulda only reproduces sexually. So then I would say that when it comes to the achbar, only the type of achbar that reproduces sexually is going to be tameh. And our animal, our creature that spawns out of the earth is not going to be tummy because it doesn't reproduce sexually. So tamalamar basheretz. So the Gemara says, okay, the word basheretz means, regardless of how it comes into existence, as long as it shorts, as long as it crawls on the ground, so it's going to be tummy. So again, drasha. Meaning, in terms of argumentation, we can argue in both directions, so we have a drasha. Okay, so what do we have right now? So we basically have, through drashas, come to the following conclusion. There are eight main categories of shratzim that are going to convey tumah. Within each eight, there are many subcategories, which is clear and obvious in the Gemara. In terms of giving definition characteristic to which of the types are going to be tumah within the eight, so number one, it has to be a land animal, a land creature, not a sea creature. And number two, it does not matter how it reproduces, whether sexually or asexually, does not matter how it reproduces, it's going to be tumah. So one of the Chachamim asked Rava, why don't we make the following argument? And meaning within the drashas. So basheretz is there to include our spawned creature. And the word hashoretz, kol shehu sheretz, ve'afilu achbar shebeyam. And maybe hashoretz is coming to tell us that that regardless of whether it's a land or a sea version, it's going to be tameh. So maybe that's how we should work with the drashas. I already anticipate what you're going to say to me. V'imishum al ha'aretz. Now remember, on the bottom of the previous amud, we darshan al ha'aretz is there to tell us only the land version, not the sea version. But now we're trying to argue, this chacham is trying to argue in front of Rava. No, it really is both land and sea, both creatures. And when the Torah says the words al ha'aretz, al ha'aretz yitma yar liyam lo yitma. Well, maybe that means to tell me that it's only going to be tamei if it dies on land, but not on sea. To which the response is very simple. And the response is very simple. Meaning, once you're telling me, once you start, your starting point is that both land and sea versions are going to be an avatama, and then you're going to tell me, and then it makes a difference where it dies, it shouldn't make a difference. Once this is a type of animal that's going to be an avatama, so then regardless of where it dies, an avatama is an avatama once it's dead. And so there is no sustainable argument that you can make, well, maybe the Torah includes both, but it depends where it dies. Rava says it's just simply an untenable argument. V'hai al ha'aretz mibayi le'lotzi safek tumat safa. So the Gemara says, okay. So we now have a number of drashas that help us define which of the shratzim, and even within the categories, which of the shratzim are going to be metame. The Gemara says, al ha'aretz was to tell us that the land version, not the sea version. Okay. Don't I need it for another drasha? Da'amar avisu baravdima al ha'aretz lotzi safek tumat safa. Let's say you come across the following. You find an animal, one of these creatures, dead, but you find it on the water. And you simply don't know. Was it a land creature? Was it a sea creature? And you are now in a state of suffix. Now, normally, what do we say by suffix? Well, this is suffix tumma. So we already know what the halachas are regarding suffix tumma. Suffix tumma bereshus ha'yachid is sveiko tame. Suffix tame bereshus ha'rabim sveiko tahor. So we know the rules. It depends on whether it's a private domain versus a public domain. But over here, however, we're going to be learning an additional drasha in this particular regard. If I have one of the creatures that I find on the water, and I don't know whether it's a land or sea version, and even if it's a reshus hayachid, sfeiko is tahor. How do I know that? Because we have a drasha. Al ha'aretz lahotzi safik tuma tzafa. So the al ha'aretz tells me that if I have a suffix where I find the sheretz on the dead on the water, and I don't know, and even if it's a reshus hayachid, and even though we trend towards sveiko tame, nevertheless, in this particular scenario, because of a special drasha, we're going to say sveiko tahor. What the only problem the Gemara has right now, the drasha is a drasha. But the problem is that we've already used the word al ha'aretz to give us definition of which of the shratzim are going to be metame. The land version and the sea version. Al ha'aretz told us the land version. But now we have a second drasha, right? So the Gemara says, Tarti al ha'aretz k'siva. Yeah, but the Gemara says, if you go through the psukim, you'll see that it says al ha'aretz twice, and it affords us the opportunity to learn the drasha on for both points. Tana Rabbanan. Gemara continues, we're on Kuf Chazayin Amad Aleph. We are halfway down in the Amud, a little bit less than that. Four lines before the lines get wide. Tana Rabbanan Tzav Leminehu. The Torah says that the Tzav is one of the eight shratzim that is going to be an avatuma if you touch it after it is dead. And Lahavi, and what are some of the subcategories of the Tzav? Ha'arvad, V'chena Nefilim, V'salamandra. So these are all different subcategories of the Tzav, right? The Arvad we're going to be discussing in more detail a little bit later on, in just a moment. Nefilim, again, another type of toad. And salamandra is another type of toad. Okay, so the salamander is a subcategory of the toad. So again, none of us should be confused. First of all, the tzav being a toad, that's my best guess. The salamandra of the Gemara being a salamander, I know the words sound similar, but whatever. Just a crawling creature whose identity we kind of know, but not really. Anyway, they're all subcategories. Point is, they're all subcategories of the tzav. Salamandra, okay, we've heard about this many times throughout Shas. This is our fire lizard, right? It is born out of fire. It comes out of a fire. Rashi over here says that it actually is done through some sort of sorcery. Ukishaya Rabbi Akiva Magila Pasigze Omer. Ma Rabu Masech Hashem. Yeshecha Brios Gedelos Biyam. Yeshecha Brios Gedelos Biyabasha. Now Rabbi Akiva, when arriving at some of these psukim, meaning our psukim describing the shratzim and the subcategories of the shratzim. So he immediately turns to the psukim in Tehillim, specifically Kuf Dalin, and he quotes the pasuk Ma'arabu Masach Hashem Akash Baruch Hu. It's amazing. Ma'isa Breishis is amazing. So you know that there are some creatures that are gedelos b'yam v'yeshachal b'riz gedelos b'yabasha. Some grow in the ocean, some grow on land. Now the ones who grow in the ocean cannot survive on land. And the ones that grow on the land cannot survive in the water. And let's continue. Some are born at fire. Some are born in the air. So Now the one who exists in the fire need the fire to exist. And if they go into the air, so they're going to die. And shebaavir malayordos or miyad mesos. And the same thing is true conversely. Those that need air cannot go into the fire where there is no air. And they're going to die immediately. And ma rabu masech Hashem. First of all, you see the four elements over here, right? The classic four elements, which, by the way, there is no Gemara that clearly articulates, right, the classic four elements of air, fire, water, and earth. But in other words, clearly this brisa is reflecting on the four elements. The one who is most articulate about the four elements is the Rambam. The Rambam talks about the four classic elements. But anyway, but basically, Rabbi Kiva says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ma'isa Breishis is so organized and so specific and so particular, and Rabbi Kiva just simply acknowledges Ma'aribu Masach Hashem. It's phenomenal. Tana Rabbanan Kol Sheyesh B'Yabasha Yesh B'Yam Chutz Min HaChulda. Okay, so I told you about this earlier this morning, but better than that, we're seeing the Gemara inside right now. Any animal, any land creature has a corresponding sea creature, with the notable exception of the chulda. Amar Rabbi Zera Maikra Hazina Kol Yoshvei Chaled. So we have a pasuk that actually intimates to this idea that the chulda is a land creature and only a land creature. Yoshvei Chaled. Now, the pasuk probably on its simple level is just simply referring to a group of people, but the word chaled is obviously a derivative of the word chulda, and it's yoshvei, meaning they are only land dwellers, not sea dwellers. There's no corresponding sea creature. I'm Ravuna Bereder of Yeshua, Bivri de Narash Enom in a Yishuv. The Bivrim of Narash are Enom in a Yishuv. They are not land creatures, but they are only sea creatures. Okay, and that's an important point. The Gemara does not articulate why, but in other words, it's a sheretz. If one were to consume it, he'd be violating an iser. Which iser is he violating? The land creature, the shratzei hadama, or the shratzei hayam? Okay, so just in other words, you have to know the basics in order to warn people properly of what aver they're about to violate. Amar Papa, bishamta narish. As long as we talked about Narish the creatures, we're going to be talking about Narish the people. Now, geographically, where is Narish? I don't know. But it is a city comprised of people that were just simply not good people. Now, Rapapa says they should be put in Cherem, Bishamta Narish. And when I say that they're put in Cherem, I mean every single one of them. Tarbe Mashche V'ilise, all right, the fat, the hide, right, the tails. Meaning, but in other words, he's referring to the people. He's not referring to the animals. He's not going to be censoring a group of animals. In other words, the people of Narish are just simply bad people. You don't normally hear this kind of talk where basically you're excommunicating an entire population across the board. Okay, and I guess it would have been easier for us to understand this if we knew Narish, the town Narish, and we knew the people of Narish. Anyway, clearly the Gemara does not like them. The Gemara does not leave this topic alone. The Gemara sits on this topic for a little bit. Eretz, Shemit Dvar Hashem. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu clearly giving tochacha, rebuke to a group of people. Who is he giving it to? Well, in the context of our Gemara, we know the answer. So Amar Rapapa lo ava Narish shamo Dvar Hashem. This is a reference to the people of Narish who were refusing to listen to Dvar Hashem. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Narsha'a Nashkaich. The Gemara gives us three quick phrases. Lessons that we should remember. Number one, somebody from Narish gives you a kiss, so mani kachach, so make sure to count your teeth. Okay, that, I know. I really do love that first one also. I really enjoy that one. Number two, Nahar Pekoda Levyach. If you get escorted by anyone from Nahar Pekod, so Maglima Shapira Dechazi Alach. So make sure to hold on tight to your clothing, because right they love to just take things. And number three, Pumpadisa Levyach. If you were escorted by somebody from Pumpadisa, so Ashneush Bazech. So he's going to ask you what hotel you plan on staying at. So whatever answer you give him, make sure not to stay at that hotel, but make sure to stay at a different hotel. Now, Pumpadisa, by the way, that one I think is right. That one is, I guess, in what the little that I know, like the most shocking. Like Pumbedisa, there's a yeshiva in Pumbedisa, and there's, you know, and there's Torah learned in Pumbedisa, and again, now to excommunicate the city as a whole, like that one surprised me. I didn't see that one coming.
He's not talking about the Jews of Pumbedisa, right?
I suppose, I'm imagining. Amar of Huna Barturta, Pam Achas Halachti Lavad. So there was a one time that I went to the Vad, right, some sort of convention, and Verisa Nachashu Kuruch Halatzav. And I saw in the act of reproduction, a snake and a tzav. Now, again, I'll call it a toad, but who knows? They are two different animals. They're two different creatures. So, le'yamim yatsa arvod mibineihem. And out came the arvad. Now, you'll remember that the arvad is one of our animals we identified as a subcategory of the tzav. And what? And what just happened? U'kishabat l'fnei Rabbi Shimon HaChassid Amar li Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu heim yivir b'ir shlo barasi b'olami af ani avi aleihem. So again, now we're talking about communities that are just simply not good communities. They created creatures that I had no intention on creating. So therefore, I'm going to have an animal attack them that really shouldn't be formed. Meaning, this union of the snake and the toad getting together and creating this, you know, this mutt of a creature really shouldn't happen. Now the Gemara says, "You really shouldn't happen." By the way, we have a Gemara that talks about basic compatibility. Is it possible for different creatures to procreate and create progeny? And so, basically, in order to create compatibility, there are two characteristics that you need. They have to have tashmish in the same manner. Right, there are different ways to have tashmish. Right, panim keneged panim keneged oref, oref keneged oref. So there are different ways to have tashmish, and so therefore the first thing of compatibility is that their method of tashmish has to be the same, and number two, gestation period. The gestation period has to be the same, and so over here we're talking about a toad and a snake. Now you can't ask me about tashmish because I don't know. You can ask me about gestation period. I do know. I know because Rashi tells me over here, it's not the same gestation period. And so therefore, how can they then procreate and create now some creature, some mutated creature? Amarav, neis besoch neis. So the Gemara says, okay, it's miraculous, meaning you're right. B'derech ha-teva, from natural law, it shouldn't happen. But Kadosh Baruch Hu over here broke the rules of natural law. So the Gemara says, hi, pura nasahu. So the Gemara says, okay, but breaking the rules of natural law to create some malicious creature that is ready to attack people, like Akash Baruch Hu is going to break nature for this to happen. So the Gemara says that's correct in this regard. My neis besoch neis leporneils. The Gemara says yes, here it's going to happen because here it is to extract punishment against people who are violating the Torah. So over here, Akash Baruch Hu will break nature in order to do so.
Yeah. Have relations with not their own species.
Okay, correct. All right, let's start the next Mishnah. Ha'ever v'abasa mududalim bebehema, mitzamim tamas ochlin, bimkomam v'tzrichen he'achsher. A topic that we talked about in the fourth parak of the Masechta, but now we get to talk about it vis-a-vis Tama, and that is dangling limbs. The dangling limbs of an animal, or the dangling flesh of an animal. So they are still attached physically, they are halachically attached, but they're also food. Now this is a duality, and it's just simply you're going to have to hold two thoughts together at the same time, even though these two thoughts are not in perfect agreement with one another. Is that limb that fell off, is that Aver Menachai? No, it's still attached. Even if the attachment is a really tenuous attachment, it doesn't matter. It's still attached. So it's not Aver Menachai. Is it food? Yes. Now, of course, an animal alive and walking is not considered food and is not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. But because this limb is mostly detached, so therefore it's going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Aye, but it's still connected. Okay, good. That's a duality. You're just going to have to accept both of these thoughts and hold them in your head at the same time. We're going to get to that topic. So the Tamei Tumas Ochlin bimkom v'tzrichin hechsher. Now, being that it's subject to Tumas Ochlin, so it has to behave like the rules of Tumas Ochlin. And as we've gone over numerous times, Tumas Ochlin is only going to be subject to Tumas, only going to be susceptible to Tumas if it comes into contact with liquid, this being no different. Rashi over here asked the question, if this limb falls off, so this limb is going to be an Avha Tumah. So we have a scenario in which it's going to be an Avha Tumah. Remember, we learned this rule here in the ninth parak of Chulin. Anything that's going to be an Avha Tumah does not require Hechsher in its state of Tumas Ochlin. So why over here does it require Hechsher? So Rashi on the bottom of the Amud writes, and here I'm going to read, V'tzrichin Hechsher lava b'mayim pamachas la'achar shenildudu v'shuv mekablin Tumah olamis. So Rashi says, and I'm going to reject the idea, I'm going to reject it. The Mishnah clearly is rejecting the idea that it's going to become Tumah Chamura. This rule, that something that's going to become Tumah Chamura does not require Hechsher, that's only if it definitely is going to become Tumah Chamura. You see over here, with our Avraham Adul-Dal, with our dangling limb, you can shech the animal. And if you shech the animal, of course, assuming it's a kosher type of animal, but you could shech the animal, and then that Aver is not going to be an Avatumah. So it's true that if the animal dies, that Aver will become an Avatumah, right? We can call it Aver Menachai, right? Later, we'll make the fine distinction between Nevela versus Aver Menachai. But Aver Menachai is also an Avatumah. So it could die, and that limb could be an Aver Menachai, but that's not the only result. It could shecht it, and then that limb is not going to be Aver Menachai. So the rule is correct. Anything that's going to become Tumah Chamura does not require Hechsher, but this does not have to become Tumah Chamura. Continuing now to the top of the next Amud. Nishchata HaBehema Hochshiru B'dameha Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, if I were to shecht this animal, so then the limb is going to be kosher and mukhshar lekabel tuma with the blood of the animal in which I shecht it. Divramer Rabbi Shimon Amar lo hukhshar. Rabbi Shimon says it does not become mukhshar with the blood. The Gemara is going to discuss Rabbi Shimon's opinion in greater detail in tomorrow's daf. Mesa behema habasar tzarich hechsher. Now, if the animal dies without a shechita, so then it's going to require a hechsher. The animal is going to require a hechsher, the meat of the animal. Ha'aver mitame mishum aver menachai, ve'ina mitame mishum aver nevela, divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, as far as the dangling limb is concerned, so that is going to be subject to aver menachai, but not nevela. Now, they're both avatumas. There are differences between them. We're going to articulate them tomorrow. And Rabbi Shimon Matar, Rabbi Shimon says in such a situation, it's going to be Torah. Let's start the Gemara a little bit. Tumas Ochlin in Tumas Nevela Lo. Hechi Dami. So the Gemara says our dangling limb. So it's subject to Tumas Ochlin, but it's not going to be subject to Tumas Nevela. And the Gemara says, let's understand it a little bit better. Ida Malan Aruka, Afilu Tuma Ochlin Nami Lo Letame. Now, if it's going to regenerate, if it has the power to regenerate, so then it shouldn't be subject to Tumas Ochlin. It's part and parcel of a live animal that has regenerative properties and therefore is just simply part of the animal and not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Now, if it can't regenerate, so that means that this dangling limb is basically, even though physically connected, halachically detached. Now, the Gemara uses the word nevela, but Phil is absolutely correct. It's aver menachai, even in its current state. So the Gemara says, so I don't get it. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's explain. Lo lamdein malan aruka. So over here, it does not have regenerative properties. This dangling limb is not going to regenerate. Vishani tumas nevela derechman amar ki yipol achi yipol. And in terms of why isn't Aver Menachai, it's a special din in Aver Menachai. Aver Menachai needs full detachment. Anything prior to that, even though this limb is not going to recover, but anything prior to that is just simply not going to be subject to Eiver Menachai. Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara quotes a Brisa that supports this as well. Ha'Eiver Vabasa Mududalim Bebehema Morim Bechuta Sa'ara Yachol Yitma Tomas Nevela Tamar Lamar Yipol Achipol. And basically, the Brisa corroborates exactly this point, that in order for something to be Eiver Menachai, you need full detachment. Now, okay, the next observation of the Gemara we'll start with tomorrow is that this dangling limb, even though it's not Eiver Menachai, but it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. We'll talk more about that. We'll start at that point when tomorrow's daf.